If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Long and Winding Railroad. It's been a while. I apologize for that. It's just been busy. Life, other projects here at Post Wrestling, MCU Later, Post Perez, other things. But I'm back, and I have a return guest taking time out of his own busy schedule. I'm very thankful for that. It's from WrestleNomics and Pollock and Thurston. It's Brandon Thurston. Brandon, hello.
Thank you for having me again. I think this is time number three, correct?
You did Kawada versus Albright.
Yes. And we also, didn't we also do Kawada Misawa versus, Kawada and Tawai versus Akiyama and Misawa from December 6, 1996?
I think so. I checked. I did a quick check about, Brad's been on more than once. You know, this isn't his first time, but.
I wanted to compare myself, though. So has anyone else been on here three times?
I think JP Houlihan has been on three times. I think from Grapple, and I think Dylan Fox from the Eastern Laird has been on. I think he's been on three times.
Okay.
But you know, Wei and John have only been on once.
Okay. So here's we did do the Real World Tag League Final 1996 in March of 2021.
There you go.
40 years ago.
But your last appearance was Kawada versus Albright, and that's actually almost 2 years exactly to the date.
Ago.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm glad you're here. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
I'm back for my biannual every 2 years appearance.
Every 2 years, Brandon has to come pick a match
and actually watch a match. Yes,
in full, and make notes about it.
With notes. Yes,
that's right.
The notes are up. I'm ready to go.
There you go. But how have you been? How's WrestleNomics been?
It's good. We're reporting lots of things, getting more into legal reporting.
Always
up in Vince's business, reporting on what he's up to these days. But no, things are good. I continue to do, as people probably listening to this know, do a Pollock and Thurston every Wednesday.
That's right. It's one of the flagship shows here at Post Wrestling is Pollock and Thurston.
Oh, wow.
Hard-hitting news. Okay. People want to know all about Vince's business.
they do. He's got a lot of money and still a significant amount of power. Yeah,
there you go. Also, Tony's business. You know, when are we gonna get into like Bushiroad's business? I want to know when they're gonna finally merge Stardom World and New Japan World into one platform and make it affordable for consumers, so people aren't paying an arm and leg to try to follow both products.
We did. Discussed the Bushiroad filings last they were reported. But yeah, they described their business as soft, the attendance as soft. yes. But their attendance seems to be turning in the right direction. I mean, it's way off from where it was pre-pandemic still, but it seems to be trending upward.
You know what it is? It's like they're finally pushing you guys who are interesting instead of just rehashing guys who can't make it, like Evil, you know? It's like that project's done. Are they doing the right thing now?
Are they focusing on it? Okay. Because they really need to, right? Like everybody's gone now. Naito is gone.
Naito's gone now.
Nakamura's been gone for going on 10 years.
Yeah.
But Tanahashi's about to be done, and Okada's gone, and even Ospreay's gone.
Okada was the big blow to them. Yeah. Okada leaving, big blow to them.
Yeah.
But he was like, I'm getting tired of being booked by Ghetto. But hey, this is not a New Japan podcast. So actually, this is a All Japan podcast. For the most part, we try to stick with All Japan, and we are in All Japan. We take some forays into Pro Wrestling Noah, of course. So even in the future, I think we might have done ROH. We're going to do ROH in the future. That's a secret project that we're going to save that for a special guest and a special match in the future. But today,
the match that I selected, is this does this fit into the you accepted it. So does this fit into the Royal Road style and concept?
I think so. Like, I like to try to put like
people pushing matches. Borders here.
No, I don't think so, because when I watched it, it was the first time for me to watch it. And we'll talk about more of it in the actual match review. But the I like how it's different from what you would expect. And even in that time period in the 80s, in the mid 80s, because so we're going to talk about Jumbo Tsuruta challenging for the NWA World's Heavyweight title. I like to call it that, by the way. I don't just like to say the world title. I like to say the world's heavyweight title. He's challenging for the title against then current champion, which was Kerry Von Erich. And I think it's really interesting because Kerry does not wrestle like most of the regular Gaikokujin who wrestle for Baba. And that would be Stan Hansen, Bruce Brody, Abdullah Butcher, and then later on, Steve Williams, Terry Gordy. He does not wrestle that style at all, including in this match. So I want to talk about that. I think, but you know, it's interesting because Jumbo has to kind of adapt his style of the pre-Royal Road style. Like, Royal Road doesn't really happen until really the Triple Crown is created, and then Tenryu and Jumbo really pioneer what Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi, Taue would then, and Steve Williams and Terry Gordy would then like just to elevate to a different level. But this falls in the parameters. I like to look at the context of where the Royal Road came from.
I'm not challenging. I'm just trying to understand. So you would say it starts around 89 with the Tenryu and Jumbo feud?
Yes. Yeah. The actual Royal Road. Because then, like, there's a lot of debate because, like, apparently back in the 80s, like, all these dudes like Choshu, Fujinami, and guys in New Japan would, like, laugh at Jumbo and Tenryu for wrestling an old style, like Baba style from like the 70s. And, but then who had the last laugh there? I mean, they pioneered a different style with Strong Style, with the MMA influx, with Inoki's influence. But, you know, Baba then like, and Misawa and them just took it to, you know, a different level that I don't think anyone's reached ever again, even in Noah. But, you know, they tried an ROH in the early 2000s. God bless them. They tried, but, you know,
New
we'll
Japan
see.
2010s, no?
No. It's still kind of, an evolution of Strong Style versus Royal Road. I don't think New Japan's ever really fully adopted Strong Style, even with, like, guys like, you know, Kota Ibushi and Naito trying to drop each other on each other's heads all the time. But today, we are talking about Kerry Von Erich versus Jumbo Tsuruta from May 22nd, 1984 for the NWA World's Heavyweight title. This is from the All Japan Grand Champion Carnival 2 tour. This is day 5 of that tour from the Dennen Coliseum in Oda, Tokyo, which is an outdoor tennis stadium that they used to hold shows in the 80s.
Looking at that, this building's closed in 1989. I was like, what is this Dennen Coliseum that they're running?
I think it's probably been replaced by the Oda Ward Gymnasium, which you see a lot of New Japan shows and other companies run today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you picked this match and I was like, oh, I've never even heard of this match. And I was kind of curious why you picked this one.
This is a match that I first saw sometime probably in the mid-2000s, in the era where we're moving away from physical media and we're starting to actually download video of matches online, which was through weird file sharing platforms like YouSendIt and Mega Upload and stuff like that, BearShare maybe. And so this, you know, this is one of the first matches that I saw through those means, and I remember really being impressed by it, especially, you know, you kind of maybe adjust your scale when you're watching a match from 1984. And I mean, we can get into the match itself. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but like, it was a match that definitely at the time I was impressed with, and it was a different kind of match from what I was used to seeing.
From like like footage you would see of like, you know, the 90s of All Japan?
Or like looking for matches that were like from the 80s, which I had not seen much of, period, at the time, and particularly from Japan. But to see like what are there great matches that, you know, make audiences feel like the great matches of later times is, you know, is match quality something that just emerged and was created in the 90s somewhere? Or are there great matches in the 80s too? And this was like, oh, that was a really good match.
Oh, the crowd definitely
makes it really
I think elevates it. It's a good match in ring, I will say that. I don't know if it reaches like a 90s level of like four pillars,
yeah.
But the crowd really makes this match, and I think a lot of it has to do with the context of Jumbo's challenging for the NWA World Heavyweight title. Let's talk about 1984 though.
Yes.
It's actually quite an interesting year for both guys. For Kerry, so he of course wins the NWA World title from Ric Flair earlier in the month from Ric Flair on May 6th at the first ever Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions at Texas Stadium. This is, of course, a memorial to his brother David, who unfortunately passed away in February of 84 in Japan. There's a lot of controversy and, like, you know, I mean, rumors and speculation about like the exact nature of how he died. The official is that he died of, you know, natural causes. But Ric Flair, I think, famously in his book said, no, he was a drug overdose, and Bruiser Brody flushed all the drugs down before the police got there.
And Baba covered it. This would be Kerry's first tour since David died in Japan, yeah. I believe. I looked, and it looks like it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this. So he wins the title from Flair on May 6th. And he, in the next 16 days before this match with Jumbo, he would have 11 title defenses. Of course, you know, it's pro wrestling, it's a work, but and a lot of them are like countouts and DQs. I was like looking at cage match. But he took on Terry Gordy, Ric Flair again, Superstar Billy Graham, Mike Rotundo, Outlaw Ron Bass, and then, you know, he would lose the title back to Flair the next day after this match, actually. So spoiler alert, Jumbo doesn't win the NWA world title in this match. But so there's that for Kerry. I'm sure it's just a roller coaster for him, you know.
And so his title reign is less than a month. He wins it in early May. He drops it back in late May. And wasn't the story, I don't know if you remember, because I don't remember it clearly. Isn't the story like he missed some bookings or something like that? And the end of it was like, forget this. He's got to drop it back.
Oh, I don't know. But I never thought that they were going to let him keep that title over Flair. Because, like, I just don't think Fritz was that powerful of a promoter, even in 84, to be able to hold on to that title for his promotion and make WCCW, like, a higher priority for the NWA than, say, World Championship Wrestling or Georgia Championship Wrestling at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for Kerry. That's his context, like, just tons of emotions going. He finally wins the world title for his family. It's because, you know... But he lost his older brother earlier in the year. Just, you know, if you see the Iron Claw, which like really kind of waters it down, the immense tragedy of the Von Erich family. But you get to kind of feel for like how devastating the loss of David was for the entire family, and particularly for Kerry, who seemed like he was like really close with all his brothers. Jumbo, though, early in the year, he had won the AWA world title from Nick Bockwinkel on February 23rd in Tokyo, and he defended it 17 times until losing it to Rick Martel on May 13th in 1984 in St. Paul, Minnesota. So, you know, that was a big deal for Jumbo to win what was recognized as one of the, you know, three major world titles at the time from North America, which would be the WWF title, the AWA world title, and the NWA world heavyweight title, of course. So, you know, Jumbo and the fans are like, well, we're back with the NWA. Baba's back with NWA. He's not dealing with Vern anymore. Maybe we could get the NWA back on the rounded waist of a Japanese guy here in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Baba being like the first guy to hold that title, who's a Japanese native. And so, yeah, I think that adds the context of why the fans are very excited to see is also that, you know, like they're aware of like the story of David Von Erich passing away in Japan. They're aware that, you know, Kerry won the title from Ric Flair and he's defending it in Japan against Jumbo. That's so they're excited about that as well. And that's why we get into this match. And
Baba had won the NWA title twice in the past, short reigns, but so they have good reason to believe that Jumbo could. This is possible.
I mean, Jumbo's the clear successor to Baba's legacy, like Fujinami and Choshu were to Inoki's legacy in New Japan. But before we get to the match itself, Brian.
Well, I was going to say, are you going to talk about what else is on this card?
Oh yeah, I was going to run through the card. Right. So, the card we have the undercard is in the opener. Tarzan Goto defeats Toshiaki Kawada in 11 minutes and 29 seconds. Tarzan Goto famously later becoming FMW guy, a deathmatch dude. 90s, he wouldn't be getting any wins over Kawada. In second match, Motoshi Okuma defeats Yoshihiro Momota. Third match, Great Kojika defeats Nobuyoshi Sugawara. In a tag team match, Masanobu Fuchi and Rocky Hata defeat Hiromichi Fuyuki and Magic Dragon. Takashi Ishikawa defeats Ultra 7. Asuhara Hara, Asushi Onida, and Mighty Inoue defeat interesting team of Bobby Heenan, Goro Tsurumi, and Gypsy Joe. Wow. What a trio.
Match? Was this like a anarchy in the arena? Yeah.
If only Baba booked that kind of stuff in the 80s. No, I'm sure it was just straight on singles match. I'm sure there's some comedy involved here. I don't think Bobby Heenan's doing anything like Royal Rose style in the 80s, even. A singles match, Prince Tonga, later to be known as King Tonga, later to be known as Haku and Ming, defeats Buzz Tyler. Can you imagine if that was Buzz Sawyer instead? What a match that would have been. Mm-hmm. In 12 minutes, 32 seconds. And our semi main event, Jinichiro Tenryu and Giant Baba took on the ultra heelish team of Tiger Jeet Singh and Umanosuke Ueda. That was, of course, a double count out because Tiger Jeet Singh not really doing the JOB.
No, even a tag match, we can't have someone.
Even with the promoter in 8 minutes, 11 seconds. And our semi main event was Harley Race taking on Ric Flair. Wow. As they would like to say in the WWF commentary, a main event anywhere in the world.
And apparently there's video of this somewhere because there's 36 votes for it on Cage Match. So
apparently
find video of it. And it's fairly highly rated, a 7.84 at the moment.
I forgot what the Cage Match rating for Kerry versus Jumbo was. So did you remember?
It is. I'm looking at it right now. It is 8.62. So, and that's like Kerry's second best singles match on Cage Match.
What is his first? The one with Flair?
The Hawaii Hour Draw with Flair. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing with the Freebirds.
Nothing this high, I guess. There's also the Rumble 92, which he is in, which is his second highest rated match.
That can't really be counted as much. But let's get into the match itself. The video. In the video, we see the full entrances. So the challenger, Jumbo Tsuruta, comes out first to the strains of his best theme song, in my opinion, Brandon, which is called J, version one of J, which he would use from 1983 to 1987. He would then drop it for a little while. And then he comes back to it from his pinnacle, 1990, through to like the tail end of his career in 1998. I love this song. I love the fact that he goes back to it in 1990 when he's starting Tsuruta Gun and he's starting to feud with the Super Generation Army. It's just like, my era was best. F you guys. So there you go. That's what
I actually used his music when I was on the Indies for a short time.
Really?
Yes. Yes. It was short-lived, but yes. Because I figured, you know what? I'll use this because like most of this audience doesn't know what this is, and some of them do will get it, and it'll seem unique.
I would have got it if I ever saw you live on the Indies.
Yes,
I would. Yeah. Who is this Brandon Thurston guy? I'm going to cheer for him. Kerry comes out second, as is befitting of the World Heavyweight Champion, but not to Tom Sawyer by Rush.
Oh,
Brandon.
No.
He comes out to Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, which, you know, is synonymous with Rocky III and like some other people, like maybe Hulk Hogan back in the day before he gets real American. So I just thought that was interesting choice. Maybe probably Baba choice. Kerry's robe. On the back, it says, in memory of David, 1958 to 1984. Both men are introduced, and they get cheers from the fans. Kerry second in his corner, helping him out, is Hiromichi Fuyuki, Samson Fuyuki, one half of the Footloose, later to become a big star in the FMW, feuding with Atsushi Onita, who we also mentioned was on this card. A lot of people from All Japan would then pioneer deathmatch wrestling.
Yes.
And Great Kujika starts Big Japan Pro Wrestling. He's the founder of that company.
And he's in Jumbo's corner.
He's in Jumbo's corner. Yeah.
Yes, along with Masanobu Fuchi.
Yeah, Masanobu Fuchi giving poor Jumbo the scalp massage after the second fall, which we'll get to in a second. One of my favorite things about watching old Japanese wrestling from this era, or any era really, Brandon, is to see who's outside at ringside. And we mentioned Haku, there's Masanobu Fuchi.
I didn't catch Haku out there.
He's just like, you'll see him. If you watch it again, you just see him. He's just like by himself. He's not like in anyone's corner. He's just like, he's a ring attendant because he's training in the dojo. So he has to be out there. He's doing young boy duties. Believe it or not, at one point, Haku was a young boy.
And something else I always notice when I watch matches, I think it's from 89 and prior, and they've got on the screen in the bug, it says in this case S59, and then there's the kanji for year, so that means Showa 59, right?
Yes, it would talk about the you know, Showa, Heisei, whatever.
Yeah, and that's related to who the emperor is at the time.
Yes.
And I remember, like, when I was getting into tape trading, there was very little that was being like hyped up around wrestling from before the 90s. And it was sort of like a novelty to see people trading tapes, or, you know, tape listings for stuff from before 89 or so. And people would call it like Showa Pro Wrestling, you know, Showa Pro Wrestling. Like, do you remember encountering that?
Not in my tape trading days. Yeah. It's like later when I live in Japan and I'm aware of the different eras. So like right now we're in the Reiwa era. Because the Reiwa era started when the new emperor took power from his father and was anointed emperor of Japan. So before it was Heisei. I always get them confused. Showa is then Heisei. So, you know, we just kind of, you know, which is, it kind of matches like kind of the kind of different stylistic change, generational changes we see in Japanese wrestling.
You could call this year like Trump 5 or something.
Huh? Trump 5?
Trump 5.
I'm trying to not think about that. I don't want to name any years after certain people. Thank you very much. So we see a lot of people in this. Some of my favorite stuff is like watching 90s All Japan and seeing, oh, there's Kenta, there's Marufuji, there's Morishima, you know, there's all these guys out there. The bell rings, and immediately the crowd breaks into a big Suruta chant. And so, I also want to mention Jumbo's look, because this is Jumbo at his most basic look, Brandon. Black trunks, black boots, no knee pads. He doesn't have his trademark elbow pad that he would wear later on. No wrist tape even. He's just like young boy Jumbo, but he's not a young boy in this. He's been wrestling for about, I don't know, 15, 20 years at this point, maybe. He started in the 70s. No, like about 15 years. He started mid-70s with the Funk Brothers, who we'll talk about. Because he breaks up some Terry and Dory in this match. The first 5 minutes of this match are basically a feeling out process where both men are kind of just exactly doing that, feeling each other out. Because as far as I could find out, this is the first and only time they have wrestled one another, at least in a singles match. So, like, I would imagine they're both like kind of nervous. Okay, what's he going to do? What am I going to do? Is he going to understand Texas style? Is he going to understand, you know, All Japan style? We'll find out.
He's gonna know that he's about to get stiffed by Von Erich.
He's wrestled Stan Hansen multiple times. He's used to being stiffed by a guy from Texas. So Jumbo finally does something significant by applying a double arm underhook and lifting Kerry up for a suplex, which fires up the crowd. Kerry comes back by grabbing a wrist lock and attacking Jumbo's left arm. Jumbo gets shot into the ropes, dodges an elbow, and hits a cross body block for a two count. He then applies an abdominal stretch on Kerry, which he transitions into a kind of a ground octopus hold, and then into an ankle lock of sorts. This is when it really gets interesting, Brandon, because Kerry escapes. and goes for the Iron Claw, all caps, exclamation point.
Yes.
Yes, right. And the fans know all about the dangers of the Iron Claw, and so they start another Suruta chant again, because Fritz wrestled there.
Right.
David wrestled there before Kerry, and Kerry's been
wrestling.
This move
is over.
Yes, this move is over, because they know the dangers of the Iron Claw. Maybe even they got familiar with it when the odd time Baron von Raschke went over to Japan to wrestle. Jumble is able to block it from reaching his face, but Kerry is able to apply the claw to Jumbo's stomach. And I don't know, when you wrestled, Brandon, has everyone ever applied the Iron Claw to you?
I'm sure at some point, if only in training. I don't know that anybody used it on me in an actual live match. I don't think so. But I remember people like messing around, I'm sure, with like the stomach claw, just because it was like to us at the time like a ridiculous move that you would like grab somebody's, you know, abdomen, grab somebody's gut and be like, you know, and sell it. It was hilarious to us at the time, I'm sure.
Lowe's knows laundry day should be easy. Achieve maximum versatility with a dryer door that swings open either way, making load transfer from washer to dryer a breeze. Plus, with LG ThinQ, save time by controlling your washer remotely. Shop LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, today at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
But if someone with a big hand and a good grip, and like was as strong as Kerry Von Erich, grabbed you by the head and just started squeezing your head, I legit think that would hurt. Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think. Yeah. I remember like my cousins beating me up and like hurting me with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I always like Barry Windham's claw that he got from Blackjack Mulligan, and then when he joined the Horsemen, he wore the black glove and he just would squeeze Dusty's head, and then somehow Dusty would blade himself, and somehow he's just squeezing all the blood out of Dusty's forehead there. It's crazy. Yeah. Jumbo's able to kick Kerry off, but the damage has been done. Jumbo catches Kerry in a front face lock, but Kerry is able to power up, carries Saruta across the ring and just places on top of the top turnbuckle and just gives him a hard shove. Mm-hmm. If it were someone today, they would have hit a Meteora and then inverted Poison Rana and followed with a 630 splash and only get a 2.5 count, Brandon. But that's 2025. This is 1984. So we haven't evolved to the point where, you know, it's just a shove at this point in 84.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I go through these matches, I try to like, oh, yeah, I remember watching when I was doing training some now 5 years ago. I would watch trainee matches and like take notes and for things to talk with them about after. So I'm like looking for things that just make an impression with me. But there's great tension here in the beginning, like just coming off the bell, and like they're immediately, especially Kerry, is like he's like electrified with like tension, like physical tension in his limbs, and he's got the hands out already in like the formation of his fingers having, you know, a claw shape to them. And all the stuff with the claw happens, but then they're still pretty early in this match, right? And as you're describing there, Kerry puts Jumbo, he just seats him up on the turnbuckle and like pops him off. And you start to get like some different emotion there. And like, you start to get, you know, anger. And then I think, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but they lock up again. And I think they get to the ropes and he shoves them again. So we're like step two into the rule of three. And then Jumbo gives it back to him, and you know you're really grabbing the people in, and that is something I think there are things in this match that would and wouldn't work in today's wrestling, but that is something that I think would easily work, especially in an early part of the match, especially if you've got two guys who are fairly over to begin with.
Yeah, and it's this shoving sequence, and it's very, you know, simple to just shove each other, but this leads Kerry to, like, you're talking about, he has attention beforehand right away with like the, you know, doing the kind of the early claw formations with his fingers, but this shoving sequence really kind of fires him up to the point where he's doing the what I call the put him up Popeye pose.
Yeah.
In wrestling, it's like, okay, now he's expecting a Pier Six brawl to happen with Jumbo.
It's not just that it happens. Like, he gets shoved back after shoving Jumbo twice, and it's Jumbo getting this mini revenge. But, like, Kerry sells it in such a way. Like, he doubles back over. He takes a little back bump. Gets right back up, and he's
great.
There's like an electricity or like an urgency to it that's really easy to forget as a performer, I think, like to just go to the next move. Like, this isn't something that you, like, you memorize in the course of going through your match in the back today, right? Like, okay, I'm going to do this, duck that, do this, slip slam that, and all that stuff. Like, then I'm going to pop. You might go through that in such a way, but that's, I guess, what when people talk about the little things in wrestling that are easy to overlook and not do, like, that's one of them. That's a great example. And just watching this, I was prompted to think about how it's 1984. And I think there's I imagine, having not wrestled in 1984, that the lack of the degree to which kayfabe had been eroded, I think I would imagine forced performers to have more integrity in the way that they performed, because they performed in such a way that where they weren't just trying to get over or have a good match, that they were really trying to protect something. And I think that probably forced them to have more urgency, to not necessarily do things more realistically, but to make everything cohere in what they were doing, which I think ultimately, like, makes people, if you're Kerry Von Erich, you get right back up. You want to show that you're in a fight here, because otherwise it's not going to convince the audience that this is really a fight. And, you know, all those things sort of feed on each other.
I think one of the interesting things about this match for me is to see someone like Kerry Von Erich, who is not someone who was, you know, someone well known for doing a lot of tours of Japan, not like Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, or Abdul the Butcher. So, you know, he has to bring kind of, you know, the North American style to this, and not, and he doesn't really adapt to a Japanese style so much in this match with Jumbo. But it's like him. And the other person that I think is really interesting to watch when they do tour Japan is Ricky Steamboat, because Ricky Steamboat does not adopt, you know, a strong style or road style at all. He really keeps it, you know, like, you know, with Southern style, like from his background in like Georgia and in continental areas.
It's fascinating to watch. Like, there's some Flair and Steamboat matches in Japan, and obviously there's a Kerry and Flair match in Japan. Just to watch them, like, two non-Japanese wrestlers who wrestled the majority of their matches not in Japan, but they're basically working a U.S. style.
Yeah, I mean, now it's like everyone try, if they work in Japan, even if they're like both, you know, foreign wrestlers, they in Japan they try to reverse wrestle almost a Japanese style, maybe some flourishes of North American style. But it's interesting.
And I would say the styles today are just more assimilated.
Well, it's all blended in. It has been, but it's but Kerry was really interesting to watch. It's like when I watched Steamboat in like the 80s in Japan, it's like, okay, like he's just asking them to work his style, and I'm sure they're like, oh yeah, you're a great wrestler, we can adapt ourselves to you, it's no problem. Yes, Jumbo is able to land a forearm on Kerry. Irish whips Kerry and hits him with one of his beautiful running knee strikes. He then follows up with a second one that sends Kerry to the outside. Kerry comes back by shoulder blocking Jumbo in the midsection, and then goes for a sunset flip over the top rope, but only gets a two count. Really, you know, it's really great seeing, like, I'm not so super familiar with Kerry, especially when he's like, you know, not, unfortunately, like, got the hindrance of missing a foot, because when I first started watching Kerry regularly, so of course he's the Texas Tornado, this is after the motorcycle accident, so just always impressed when I get to see earlier matches with Kerry, like his athleticism, even in like the 80s, for him to do a sunset flip over the top rope, you know, and clear his opponent, and like some of the size of Jumbo as well. Like, I'm always impressed by things like that. And it's just, it really kind of like amplifies the tragedy of, you know, the motorcycle accident and like his later life.
Right. So I'm just checking, the motorcycle accident is June 86. So he's still a pre-motorcycle accident here. But like, you, what stood out to me too in this, like, where Jumbo gives him
the back suplex and like goes for the pin, and he like pins him in a way that nobody would ever pin anybody today, where like he grabs the wrists and puts him puts his wrists to the canvas. And I think that's one of those things that, like, if you had not watched decades of wrestling and just had it ingrained into you the way that pro wrestling is, that's something that might occur to you to pin people in weird ways. But it's, you know, everybody can just catch a lateral press or hook the leg, and that's a normal pin. But doing weird things is, you know, is not something that you think of. And the people are really buying all of these
oh, yeah.
most casual of near falls. Like earlier you had like an abdominal stretch and he just sort of gets carried down to a pinning predicament, gets a one count, and people are just biting on it right away to see if you know, this is the NWA title.
Well, I mean, also, we'll talk. I'm going to mention this, but you know, you're like you said. So, like, Jumbo does get the first pin, in which is, by the way, a 2 out of 3 falls match. Which is why I think people are just like, oh, it's a 2 out of 3 falls match. We're going. It's for the NWA title. We're going, you know, all three falls. So if like pin happens early in the match from like a roll up, they'll buy it. They're buying it. So Jumbo gets the hits an enziguri. Beautiful. I always love Jumbo's enziguri, and then he hits the backdrop driver, and he does a full mount on Kerry. He pins him down. It's not normal, but I've seen Jumbo do this pin before against people like Tenru and the Four Pillars and people like that. So, like, I'm sure Kerry's like, this is how they pin people here in Japan. He does the JOB for the first fall. They get a 2-minute rest period before the bell rings for the second fall. And what I love about the second fall, Brandon, if there's no feeling out process here, Jumbo immediately starts hammering at Kerry. He goes for the weakened neck with forearms and then transitions to punches to his forehead, which surprisingly busts Kerry wide open. Yeah. Actually, I saw the point where Kerry does the blade itself. And I was wondering, I wonder if Ric Flair in the back said to Kerry, "Kerry, my man, you know what you need to try to follow me and Harley? Woo! You need to get some color, brother. Woo!" He probably, maybe he said, "I got some extra blades. You know how to do it, right?" Yeah, I do, Ric. I know how to blade. But my daddy showed me. Okay, there you go. I mean, here's the thing. Jumbo looks legit surprised that Kerry's bleeding. I think he was thinking, I thought I was wrestling Kerry Von Erich, not Abdul the Butcher or Ric Flair. Why is this guy bleeding? But anyways, he just goes with it. But that's my headcanon about the backstage before this match, is that Ric Flair told Kerry Von Erich, "You can't follow me and Harley unless you get some color, brother."
Mm-hmm. And he gets color just off of these punches to these John Cena style punches to the forehead.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, it's not like, I think that just wouldn't occur to people. I don't mean to default to like comparing it to today's wrestling so much, but I can't help myself. That like the notion that somebody would blade, you know, would get color today and would bleed today, it was like, well, it has to be off of like some object, some apparatus, the ring post or something like that, or something on the floor, or some object to the head. But he's just doing it right off these punches to the forehead. And as you said, he comes out, you know, with fire on Kerry and just pounds on his forehead, and all of a sudden he's bleeding.
Yeah, it's it I think it adds to the drama. So like Kerry, you know, Ric Flair's supposed advice, like that I imagine happened, works.
Speaking of advice, I did note that Jumbo was receiving some pretty avid advice from a great Kojika in the corner. So that might have been Kojika's recommendation to start, you know, start off with the punches to that.
Or maybe he's like, if he bleeds, start biting him. That you get more blood that way. Yes. Hey, but he didn't do that, thankfully. Kerry is able to get a sleeper hold on Jumbo, maybe in tribute to his brother, who used a sleeper hold that he entitled the Dream Machine. Jumbo escapes by running into the turnbuckles and ducking so that Kerry is driven face first into the turnbuckles. But Kerry fires back with a beautiful standing drop kick. From here, Jumbo blocks a punch and levels Kerry with a slap. He then proceeds to punch Kerry into oblivion in the corner, acting quite heelish, I might add, Brandon. As referee Joe Gucci tries to get him off of Kerry, but he's just relentless. Maybe he's like, "You're gonna bleed in my match. This wasn't planned. We didn't book this. I'm just gonna just hammer you in this corner." But it's great. But even though he's acting obviously as the heel in that moment, the fans love it. They're not booing him at all. it was a great use of the referee. It was a great example of how to use the referee to have the moment where he is pounding on him in the corner, which should start a five count, and Joe Higuchi tries to pull him away. Great outfit, by the way, on Joe Higuchi. Here we have a yellow collared shirt, golf style shirt, and just, you know, I don't know, Kelly green pants, I think with green boots as well on Joe Higuchi. But anyway, which just sort of like it creates pressure for this tension of the fire. Like, fire is just like, it's like shaking up a bottle, you know, and it's, you know, explodes and it sprays. And then what Joe Higuchi is doing, he's trying to like put a cap on it for a second. And then, you know, Jumbo breaks back out and goes back to the punches for a second.
I think contextually, like if you think about the psychology of what Jumbo is probably feeling in the, you know, within this, the work of the match, it's like he's got the first fall. He can smell. Literally
straight falls.
It's you know, he's like a shark. He smells the blood in the water, literally in Kerry's case here. And then he's like, I can win the NWA's. I can be the first guy to be both AWA and NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So, and I can bring the belt that Baba had back to All Japan. That'd be great. You know, yeah. So I'm, you have to kind of, when you think about that kind of headcanon, like I do, because you know, I love this style of wrestling. I like this era that I like to create my own headcanon for the motivations of wrestlers in their matches. But Joe Higuchi, by the way, going back to his referee's outfit, fantastic. He's one of the most unique, you know, referees to wear like his own thing. He's graduated though, Brandon, from his powder blue disco outfit that he like jumpsuit that he used to wear, you know, a bit earlier in the earlier 80s and in the 70s.
Yeah.
Fantastic. One of the greatest referees, though. I will say Kiyo Iwata is still my favorite referee of all time, just for like his legitimacy and the way he
by the 90s everything is uniform. Kiyo Iwata is just wearing what, white, and
he's just wearing like, that's what he wears when he goes smoking in the the break room at Cork and Hall, which I've been to, you know, when I was a smoker. I would go into the smoking room. There was a smoking room that doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
I don't think it exists anymore. I think they got rid of it.
Is it a vaping room now? Or do they vape in Japan?
I haven't been in Cork and Hall in like, you know, over 5 years, maybe close coming out in 10 years. So yeah. I'd have to go back. Like when I, last like, time I was in Cork and Hall.
Smoking is like more popular in Japan than the US.
No, but it's changing. It's shifting where like they're banning it for the most part indoors, including inside of, sporting venues. Cork and Hall, I think, I don't know. Last time I was there live to watch a show, it was still there and I was still a smoker. So I saw Kyohei Wada in there many a time having his own cigarette at the age of 60. You know, I didn't say anything to him. He was talking to other fans and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm having a cigarette in the same with, you know, 5 feet away from Kyohei Wada.
You didn't bust in and yell Kyohei?
No, I think that would have been weird, and he would have probably looked at me funny. So I don't want that. Jumbo, back to the match. Jumbo blocks a suplex and hits one of his own for a two count. Jumbo gets shot into the ropes, and both him and Kerry bump heads and both go down. Jumbo gets up first and hits a Terry Funk like pile driver for a two count. He then transitions into Dory Funk Jr. like uppercuts, which I loved that sequence. Like one after the other, it's like, that's a Terry Funk pod driver. Those are Dory Funk Jr. uppercuts. He is going back to his roots, training in West Texas on the Funk Double Cross Ranch with the Funk brothers.
He's trying to win the NWA title.
That's right. He got a call from Terry. This is what you got to do, Jumbo. You gotta hit my pod driver and then use some of Dory Jr.'s uppercuts. These Von Erich boys, they can't handle that. But he was wrong. Terry was wrong, because you know what? Kerry's able to handle the Funk Brother offense from Jumbo. He's able to mount a comeback with punches and then hits his spinning discus punch, which staggers Jumbo enough for Kerry to finally lock on the Iron Claw. All caps, exclamation point. Kerry's able. I timed this, by the way. Kerry keeps it locked on Jumbo's forehead for two whole minutes.
Two whole minutes,
Brandon. He's squeezing like the blood out of Jumbo's head. He's sending it back into the back of his skull. Very painful. Despite Jumbo's best efforts to power out of it and Kerry is able to get the three count with the Iron Claw applied on Jumbo's head at the 1942 mark. So 6:37 of minutes of action, 6 minutes, 37 seconds of action in the second fall. And here's the thing. Kerry keeps the Iron Claw locked in, even though he's won the fall. Jogucci's trying to get him off because he has to keep it locked on. He has to weaken Jumbo even more in order to get that third and decisive fall to have a successful, you know, V17. I forget how many times did he defend his belt again before Jumbo. He's going for V12 okay. on Jumbo here, but it's just not happening.
Not a submission. I think we would look at Iron Claw today and be like, is that a submission hold? But he's just using it as a pinning predicament, sort of like you would use a figure four, except for, of course, you're grabbing the head.
He's trying to weaken him to knock him into unconsciousness where he can't, mm-hmm. you know, he can't kick out or do anything. He's just powerless. In the rest period, we see Jumbo's seconds helping him recover from this dastardly Iron Claw, including his best friend, the great Masanobu Fuchi, well known for beating up Tsuyoshi Kikuchi any chance he could get, along with Jumbo. Jumbo and Kikuchi both hated, but Jumbo and Fuchi both hated Kikuchi for some reason more than any of the other members of the Super Generation Army. And we see him giving Jumbo a scalp massage. Brandon, what a pal! What a man, Masanobu. If the estimation I and the esteem I held Masanobu Fuchi wasn't high enough, it just went up like another three notches for some, like he gave Jumbo a scalp massage to help him recover from the Iron Claw.
I mean, that's how serious this hold is. I mean, you had Fritz Von Erich establish it years ago, and now it's good enough to win the NWA title and to put Jumbo down for the, you know, the first of two falls. So it could only help to get a scalp massage here as a way to sell it.
Fuchi wrestled in America. He created the Memphis Brawl, right, with Onita against who was it? Eddie Gilbert and Ricky Morton.
Tupelo, wasn't that in Tupelo,
Mississippi?
I think so.
The concession brawl stand.
Concession brawl. Yes.
Yeah, he helped pioneer that. I don't know if he ever worked Texas or against the Von Erichs, but you know, he probably heard, don't ever let them Von Erichs get the Iron Claw on you. If they bring it over to Japan, scalp massage has to help you recover. Okay, I could give one to Jumbo.
It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com.
Anyways, here's the third fall, and we see Jumbo trying to stay away from Kerry to no avail as Von Erich unloads with punches to the head and then goes for the Iron Claw yet again, but Jumbo desperately grabs Kerry's wrist to prevent it from being applied. Jumbo is able to escape to that side and catches a bit of a breather. Back in the ring, Kerry presses his attack, but Jumbo catches a running Kerry with a raised knee and staggers Kerry enough for Jumbo to grab his wrist and then start ramming the world heavyweight champion's Iron Claw hand into the turnbuckles multiple times. He then takes him over, stands on his wrist, and then proceeds to stomp the shit out of Kerry's hand. Incredible. Holy bad sportsmanship, Jumbo. And then he drags Kerry's hands across the top rope. So you do the rope burn.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure what kind of damage that would necessarily do. Like, I mean, as someone who used to wrestle, Brandon, what do you think?
The ropes are, I will always say, the ropes are deceivingly painful, right? It's just a straight, you know, piece of rubber, but they hurt a lot. And,
okay.
I don't know if that you'd hurt somebody's hand, but you definitely do hurt them, like, running full speed at them, hitting them. It makes some sense. I'll say, like, a great image. I've got it on mute here, and it's happening right now. Where his bloody hand, Carrie's bloody hand from his forehead, and he's trying to put the Iron Claw back on, and it's turning into this test of strength, like this arm wrestling match of like, oh, it's getting closer, and it's probably the image that stuck with me, and it's why we're watching this here.
Carrie tries to mount a comeback, first with kicks and then with the punch to the head, but he hurts himself more than Jumbo with that tactical error. Great selling again by Carrie. He gets the punch, but he's like, ah, oh, no, my hand. He just
it's really like hand. some Kurt Hennig reminiscent selling that he's doing throughout this.
It's great.
Yeah.
Jumbo rams the hand into the steel part of the turnbuckle and then takes Carrie outside and rams his hand into the steel post. So he's that's his tactic. It's not the neck. It's not the back. It's not the head. It's the hand.
This is giving Carrie cover for the job that he's going to have to do in a couple days to Ric Flair.
There you go. Maybe him, Fritz and Baba work this out. You got to give my boy a way up. Have Jumbo like weaken that hand. Okay, no problem. And I can't really do Baba's deep baritone justice. I won't attempt it. Jumbo suplexes Carrie over the top row back into the ring, but it's not enough to pin the chosen son of the Von Erich family. Carrie wisely switches from punches to forearm strikes instead, and at this point, but Jumbo grabs his wrist and does an over the shoulder arm breaker, and the pain he inflicts on the modern day warrior, great nickname for Carrie Von Erich, by the way, I always loved that nickname, the modern day warrior, is enough for him to do a rare begging Ospreay. So you see Carrie, like, you know, the John Cena, the Sting of world-class championship wrestling, the beloved, you know, hometown hero in Texas. He's begging. You would never see this happen in a match with Terry Gordy, Michael Hayes, Bruiser Brody, Brian Adias, Chris. I'm just going through all the people I remember who worked in world-class. Later on, Jerry Lawler. Never. It'd be Jerry Lawler begging off from Carrie, but Carrie's begging off from Jumbo because of all that damage to his hand. It's you know what? It's good on him for going the extra mile and saying, you know what? I Jumbo's the local hero. I gotta be the heel here. So I gotta do kind of the cowardly spot here. And decades before it even becomes a phrase, we see Jumbo maintaining wrist control, Brandon. And then goes for a cross chest arm breaker submission in 1984. I was like, what? I was like,
Juji Gatame. Yeah.
Did he watch to prepare for Carrie? He watched some Nobuhiko Takada or Vokan for homework.
He was watching Masahiko Kimura versus
Kiyoshi Tamura.
Yeah, something like that. I'm looking for the old the Gracie. Who's the Gracie patriarch? Not Horse.
Oh,
like Horse's father. Remember him?
Yes, like the guy who is later is saddened when Kazushi Sakuraba would go through his entire family.
Yes. Pride. Helio Gracie.
Yeah.
Yes.
They
lay in it. They lay in this cross armbar for like a good long while, which you see 10 years later.
Like 3-4 minutes? Eric Marcoche, Eric Marcotte. You know, our MMA correspondent would hate this. He would absolutely hate this spot because, you know, he Jumbo has it on carry for a good 3-4 minutes, and in MMA that would have finished the fight in like two seconds, not even 1.2 seconds. The guy would have tapped out. But this is 1984, so men are a different breed in 1984 that they can survive a Jikutame in this match. Both men get back to their feet, and Carrie is able to hit his own backdrop suplex on Jumbo. Not a dangerous one, like a kind of proto dangerous one that Jumbo uses, or the dangerous type that Steve Williams would later pioneer against poor Kenny Kobashi in the 90s. But he only gets a two because, you know, and I make the point, he didn't drop him on his head.
Yeah.
Like Steve Williams would have done.
Yeah.
Von Erich hits a sit-down pile driver, tries for a top rope elbow, but Saruta rolls out of the way. Jumbo is able to hit another jumping knee and then locks in a deep, deep Boston Crab. He must have watched how Stan Hansen won the AWA world title from Rick Martel, though I'm sure that match has not happened yet in context to this match. But there you go. This is my headcanon going all kinds of weird places again. Saruta call again from the fans as they think this might be it. Right. Yeah. And then the NWA World's Heavyweight title might come back to Japan, and it'll be Giant Baba all over again. Maybe Giant Baba paid off the NWA board directors to get the title, just like he paid off Vern Gagne to get the AWA title around Jumbo's waist. You know,
it's a well built getting to the Boston Crab is people really buy it. I guess the back elbow, which just happened on mute here, where Kerry kind of gets a foot down before he gets the rest of his body down, but nonetheless, people are bought in, and he hits the canvas, and Jumbo throws him off and gives him a knee and puts him right into the Boston Crab, and the people are ready for the finish, and this looks like a finish, but
definitely he's sitting really deep into it. That's got a legit hurt. I think that legit.
Oh, you hurt. Can definitely put a shoot. There is such a thing as a shoot Boston Crab.
Oh, yeah. Kerry is able to power out of the Boston Crab, rolls up Jumbo for the pin, but Jumbo reverses it. Kerry kicks out and goes for another roll up, but Jumbo kicks out. It's incredible to see like what is basically a fish out of water spot between these two that you would see like, you know, I don't know, Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam or Jerry Lynn and Lance Storm have in ECW. Mm-hmm. It's really quite guys this size too doing this stuff. They go back to a strike exchange and somehow Kerry places Jumbo on the top rope. But as Jumbo's falling over to the outside, he's able to catch Kerry with his legs and takes him over with them. Joe Gucci starts the 20 count, and as they try to get back into the ring, Kerry puts on the iron claw on Jumbo's forehead. But Jumbo is able to transition that into a backdrop suplex on the floor, and both men are down, and Higuchi, not surprisingly to me, reaches the 20 count, and this match is a draw because this is Japan in the 80s, and it's for the NWA World's Heavyweight title in Japan. And that's how business was done back then.
Yep. I have to say, this toppling over the top rope here is not very convincing. Much of this match is really good. But like they just decide, oh, yeah, it's time to go outside. And somebody grabs onto somebody else's neck, and like all of a sudden, Jumbo's butt is over the top rope and they topple over. It's kind of ridiculous, but
yeah. No, they have to get out there somehow, I suppose, to make it feasible for Kerry to, you know, be protected. But yeah, so it's a double count out and each man has a fall piece. That thus 2 out of 3 falls.
I did not remember this being the finish, until I rewatched it.
Oh, really? I didn't surprise me when I saw it. I was like, it's probably a double count out or DQ, because that's, you know, it's, you know, don't, this is before Baba adopts the all clean finishes philosophy.
This is the first bullshit finish we've had here on the long and winding Royal Road.
No, I'm pretty sure there's been other ones. I've done matches from the 80s before. Okay. So, so Jumbo shakes Kerry's hand and raises it in a show of respect for him. That's great. But obviously Jumbo softened up Kerry enough for the Nature Boy to regain the NWA's World Heavyweight title the next night. I'm sure Ric Flair went to Jumbo, said, thanks, brother. Jumbo's like, okay, whatever, dude. No, I'm not going out drinking with you. You're crazy. I'll go out with Tenru. He's crazy too, but he's a little less crazy than you. My thoughts on the match, I think, this is a great match for someone who likes psychology. I thought just the work, the psychology of this match, Kerry selling especially, was fantastic. And like how Jumbo really adapts himself to work more of a North American style and being trained by the Funks, I really think, you know, that probably came into play here. But, you know, and, you know, I don't even mind this non-finish because like that's the 80s. That's Baba's philosophy. That's Inoki's philosophy. That's really almost everyone in Japan's philosophy, except for Akira Maeda when he starts, you know, UFWFI. And then like, no, there's no bullshit finishes. We're doing clean finishes. And then Baba adopts that later in the 90s. And now we've all come back because now Japan is just filled with bullshit finishes, including All Japan of 2025 is filled with bullshit finishes and a lot of dumb stuff happening over there. It's not the 90s anymore. Unfortunately, it's not even, you know, Brandon, it's not even the 2020s for God's sakes over there anymore. It's just sad. But anyways, your final thoughts on the match as a whole.
I thought, like, talking through this again too, I noticed that there's a really good chase to the finish with
strong drama that would be more normal in the decades to come, but wasn't as common in the 80s. You have like Carrie doing a pile driver towards the end for a near fall and all this. And just what happens at the end too, like they shake hands and they both, you know, as we were talking through this, they both have done things that are kind of heelish in terms of Jumbo is, you know, destroying him against the ropes. But later you've got Carrie begging off. So there's no, what drew me to Japanese wrestling as a teenager in the early 2000s is here in that you have no cartoon heels and faces. You have fully formed characters, I think. You have fully formed human-like beings, which is not something you would see very much in Western wrestling, where everyone had to be a caricature. You have to be doing heat all the time, which I think dilutes heat. Instead, you have characters who do things like real human beings do, and I think makes everything, the wins and the losses and everything around it, mean a lot more. So, you know, you have that there. And like I said, it was, it incorporated a lot of the things that great matches of later eras would incorporate, but that you didn't see that much in 1984.
Yeah. So great storytelling and kind of a realism that definitely did not exist in 84, in definitely not in the WWF. This is like the transition into the Hulkamania era. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you still see kind of cartoonish people existing in places like definitely in Memphis, World Championship Wrestling in Georgia and different parts of the Mid-South and stuff like that. But, hey, back in the 80s, you could still count on like Tenryu and Jumbo to have matches with the Road Warriors. You know, no cartoons there.
But I'm not saying, finish either.
No, and you know, well, no finishes there either. But hey, you know what? The Road Warriors in Japan hit a little differently than they would in North America. But there you go. But that wraps the matchup. I will thank you again, Brandon, for taking the time out of your schedule to join me here on the your third appearance on the Long and Winding Road. Not your last appearance. We'll have you back again. Maybe before 2 years has passed. We'll have you back in after a year has passed. We'll have you back on the show and talk about another match that you will pick. Always picking a good match for me to watch, though. Thank you.
I've picked some weird matches. I feel like I've picked three. I've picked like one that was like a classic All Japan match of the 90s. And then I feel like I had to do some novelties after that.
No, I mean, I love the Kawada Albright. Pick. I thought that was a great match to review. But yeah, where can people find more of your work?
Right on this podcast and feed wherever you're listening to right now in large part, as well as WrestleNomics.com. That's a Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics, or a Substack as well, with all the same content, whichever one you want to subscribe to at WrestleNomics.substack.com. Again, all the stuff is on the website. You'll find it. You'll find it all there. Don't follow me on Twitter. Leave me alone.
No. Well, I mean, most of us really don't participate.
Some of you aren't even on there anymore.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Threads.
Yeah. But also, like, Brandon, of course, does every week with John Pollock and Thurston, and looking at the hard hitting legal, financial news of professional wrestling and MMA. I'm sure you guys love the formation of TKO and it's provided you guys with tons of content.
It has, yeah. It's I'm sure we're providing TKO with a lot of fun and adventures as well.
I'm sure. I remember I heard of all the fun adventures they put you guys through at WrestleMania last year in Philly, particularly John. But yeah, also, hey, WrestleNomics does have a merchandise page over at chopped-tees.com. So check that out.
You can get a shirt. You can get a mug, like the mug that I'm using right now.
Let's go. Of course, you can find all the content I do has merchandise over at chopped-tees.com. This show, The Long and Winding Railroad, apparently, not to toot my own horn, but I've been told that it is maybe within the post-wrestling family, the best-selling merchandise.
If you want to be like Eddie Kingston, you have to get one.
Yes. Eddie Kingston, Konosuke Takeshita, is a fan of the merchandise. There's a picture on Instagram. He's training. And Eddie gave him a shirt, and he loves wearing it, apparently. So there you go. Konosuke Takeshita and Eddie Kingston. How can you go wrong with those guys like that wearing the merch? Be like them. Go chop-tees.com. Long and winding road. Also, MCU Later, the show I do with Rich Fan, looking at all the content Marvel does in film and on Disney Plus. Post Perez. And that's with Karen Pearson. MCU Later, Post Perez are both Patreon shows on the cafe side thing. So no free letters for that. This is still a free letter show, which I'm glad about. I can promote all the paid content. But yeah, you know what? If you do go to, you know, postwrestling.com/Patreon or patreon.com/postwrestling, they go to the cafe, go to the button, go to the website, postwrestling.com, you see the cafe button, become a member, less than the cost of like what, a coffee at Starbucks, especially in Canada. Mm-hmm. You're going to get like the all access to tons of things. If you go higher, if you go up to the top tier, you get to be a producer. You get to tell John and Wei what to watch and they'll do a show. You can be on it a little bit, but you get to tell them what to watch. And who doesn't want to tell those guys what to watch? Let me tell you, a lot of people do. So go get in there, get to the producer level, and then you can have a lot of fun. Sometimes they even ask for me to be on, you know, on one of these shows to tell me what to watch. And there you go. Postwrestlingcafe.com. Brandon's got he has control. I have access. He has access. So him and Wei are super well versed in how to manipulate the stream yard here. But that's me. So WrestleNomics and Pollock and Thurston, me, this show, Post Perez, MCU Later. And, it's always a good time. A lot of great stuff at postwrestling.com. And maybe, you know, we have not seen each other in really talk since last year in Philadelphia, where we shared. We've had a Philly cheesesteak at a much less crowded place some of the places we tried before.
Rich Fan was there. Yeah.
Rich Fan was there. That was a good time.
Yeah,
it was a really good time. But hopefully, maybe I'll see you in person in the near future. We'll see.
Yeah. Are you going to Las Vegas next year? I'm probably not.
I don't. No. I say this. I don't think I would be able to cross the border with my social media. So I'm not risking it. I just wait. Mm. I'll just wait another 4 years. Okay. Hopefully, things are a lot better for people who are outspoken against certain people.
We'll see.
In the United States by then. We'll see. But I think it's fine for people, you know, from the States to come here. We're not too picky. You can come here and, you know, hopefully you can get back in.
Maybe Canada will just be a 51st state soon and then it'll be no border.
Well, then they just might not let, you know, I'm not going to get to political stuff.
But another show. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, hopefully. Always a pleasure when I do get to see you in person, yes. Brandon. Yeah. But thank you again. Come back on in the future. But for all the listeners, thank you for supporting. Thank you for watching, listening, however, either on YouTube or on whatever app you're using. And show support, chop-tees.com. A lot of other great content creators there. Please check out their merchandise as well. And until next time, we'll say goodbye and see you later.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.